Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We're not going to have Jim today as we normally do on Mondays. He is at a funeral. So actually 2 weeks straight now that we won't have Jim this week or next week because he'll be in Hawaii. And I don't imagine he would want to wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Your phone's not working in Hawaii. Come on.
No. When he texted me yesterday, there wasn't a, hey, yeah, I'll come on at 3 in the morning in Hawaii. Don't worry about it.
We'd do it for him.
That's not, well, I think that's probably the difference in the lot in life, isn't it?
Okay, fine. Have your little Hawaiian vacation, Jim.
So, kind of the way it is.
It's all right.
So, just us today.
I just want to talk about, you know, a new coach at OU. And
yeah, we'll hit that last.
There's plenty to talk about, Jim. Okay.
We'll hit that last just because that's all you're going to hear today.
Pretty much.
It'll be that. So we'll hit that last here on our show. We'll have the college football weekend, conference title games. Man, there was one good one and a bunch of duds. And Oklahoma State fans, I don't even know how they're functioning after that close call and the way that that game went down and everything that happened. So that means that the college football playoff field is set. Their other bowl games are set. How big of a solid did Baylor do the committee by beating Oklahoma State? Because that, you know, at the end of the night on Saturday, it was obvious who the four teams were going to be. There was, you know what I'm saying? It was just obvious who it was going to be.
I thought there was a slim chance for Notre Dame.
Yeah, problem is they lost to Cincinnati. There was no,
that,
you know.
That was the problem.
That was the problem. If they wouldn't have had that loss and had a different loss, even if those two teams didn't play, then I'd have been with you. But since they lost and all – the one of the only things that was consistent from the committee was ranking teams ahead of other teams they'd beaten.
Right.
We saw it with Oregon and Ohio State until Oregon lost for the second time. So
I also wonder if Kelly was still there. If that was never a thing. You know what I mean?
I don't know if it was or not.
But and then Notre Dame quickly made a hire. I think that was a clear message to the committee. We are solid. We're ready to go if you want us in there.
Trying to be. And they just needed one more loss. They needed Georgia to show up, and they'd have probably been there, but they're not. And so it was funny to see people actually rooting for Notre Dame after the way that Brian Kelly left them right there at the 11th hour ahead of the playoff committee's announcement.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so we'll talk about that.
Well, we were one of them, kind of. We thought that'd be kind of cool to see them. I thought it'd be kind of cool to see him get in with then Kelly down there with his fake accent in Baton Rouge. Going, what? I missed out on – I can't do an accent.
High school football and high school hoops over the weekend as well. Man, speaking of duds, most of those state title games in football were, including one.
5A was fun.
5A was the only good one. And 6A1 was close with Jinx and Union.
Wow.
Jinx came back to win. But man, Clinton was dominant. Elk City and Weatherford got their season started in hoops. I got a news for you.
What's that?
C.J. Nixon.
Yeah.
Remember him from football?
Absolutely.
Holy Moses.
I was told he's a good ball player.
Oh, he's way better than that.
Oh, yeah?
That dude is awesome. Awesome as a freshman.
Man.
A freshman. He's awesome. Billy, hold your horses. We'll get to the Red Tornadoes in just a second. Also, some small school hoops on Friday night to talk about as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698, give us a call, shoot us a text. Talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. Going to be outside the listening area. A couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. App has all radio stations. Here in Elk City, it's got the Penny News in it. You can check out the deals. This week's Penny News. Also, Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. The five-county tournament starts today. Not sure what the status of that is. Big Elk TV. Clinton, talk about a turnaround. Red Tornadoes win the football title on Friday, and they'll be here tomorrow night to play basketball, get the season started.
Woo.
And then, let's see. Also, Skinny on Sports Podcast. It's the show entirely. Go back and hear what we had to say about different topics. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
Wonderful. Let's start.
How about that weekend?
It was a crazy weekend.
That weather?
It was. I played golf yesterday. A little breezy, but still. I mean, it was like a sweating. Like middle of the summer, it was so hot.
I was in shorts and a shirt doing some work outside.
Looks like it's going to be a total roller coaster this week. Cool, then warm, then cool, then warm, and then by the time we roll into next week, it's back to being warm again.
You knew when that cold front hit last night.
Boy, howdy, the wind was getting it.
Good night. Anyways.
Speaking of wind, we can all use the F5 joke that we have on the text line, but what about that F5 that hit UCO on Friday night? Disguised as the maroon and gold Clinton Red Tornadoes.
I think you said it best in your Facebook post. You don't want to poke the bear or give these guys much of motivation. They were clearly locked in. I had it on, you know, Friday, but not listening and just kind of had on the, because, you know, I was calling a game. So I had it on my iPad just to keep a tab on the score. And every time I looked down, 3-0, 6-0, 13-0. 21-0, just in a heartbeat. I'm just boom, boom, boom. That was the first half. And then going back and rewatching it, they look straight up better than Tuttle, especially up front. The push, that's what shocked me, not shocked, but impressed me the most was their ability to control the line of scrimmage on both sides. That is just pure dominance, it looked like, especially from the statistical vantage point.
Yeah, he told me Tuttle had like 11 yards at halftime.
Yeah, they flashed up that graphic and I saw 11 total yards. I don't think they had a first down the first half.
It's just the thing about when we've seen Clinton's defense a couple of times with our own eyes live, and then when you watch some of the film, they get to a point where they have you in such a position to where you can't do anything, but I mean, you kind of have to throw it. And when that happens, here they come. And it sounds like they just started that from the beginning, daring Tuttle to throw it, not going to let them run the football.
Right.
And, man, when you got all those guys up there that close to the line of scrimmage and all, you know, you don't see a bunch of missed tackles by guys there, you know, maybe you can kind of run through for an extra couple yards. I think we saw Daylon do that a bunch in the semifinal where he was hit and he kind of drug the pile forward, but it wasn't like he was – bouncing off guys and really making long runs. It was just getting an extra couple after the point of attack or after the point where you get hit. But you have to, and I think it bears out when you look at their season, the one team they struggled with was the best throwing team they played in Heritage Hall.
Right.
More that spread it out, run it more of a what looks not traditional, but what it looks traditional nowadays is a spread it out, throw it around, and make the field wider, because once you get it compact inside there, those dudes, Powell, you know, is the ringleader of the whole thing. But I don't think the guys up front get enough credit with Fuller and with Turney and Crane comes off the sidelines and Ben Foster. Those guys, they do a really good job of occupying, if they're not making the play, at least occupying offensive linemen and allowing those linebackers to get to the football.
That's what I saw.
Powell especially.
I saw Powell. There's one series where it was all him. Where it was, they had another great punt, put him like right at the one, put Tuttle at the one, had an encroachment or offsides on the defense, moved him up 5 yards. And you think, well, they'll just get the first down, and they didn't, because Powell came flying in on that first down play, ran down the quarterback for a no gainer, so it was turned into 3rd and 5, and eventually an incomplete pass. But what did he have? Like 9 tackles.
Yeah,
one. I mean,
9 tackles, a sack and a half, and then he had 177 total yards on offense. 134 rush, 43 pass.
That was the key. Was Powell have to have a good game? And you know, I said that from the offensive side, but because I think I knew he's going to have a game defensively. And he did. He led the defense. He was everything on Friday night. But you're right. The offense, like I said too, the offensive line, defensive line, just the way they look like they just physically, just manhandled Tuttle, which was surprising me because Tuttle looked big, right? I mean, and look at their numbers. They are big, but Clinton just came out with more want to him. Tuttle just never had a rhythm to him.
Nate Jones with two picks in the secondary for the Red Tornadoes. Clinton becomes the first team in Oklahoma to win a title in seven straight decades.
Yeah, I heard that.
Which is just phenomenal. It's their 17th title overall, trailing Ada by two, Jinx by one, as the Trojans were able to nab their 18th title on Saturday afternoon. So
look out for that quarterback.
Yeah, one of them was a freshman.
They played two of them.
Yeah.
They started the freshman. He's going to be an up-and-comer. He's going to be a name that's going to get a lot of attention moving forward.
Shaker Resig?
Something like that.
So Clinton with the title on the football field. Mountain View Godibeau was close.
I didn't see any of it. Sound like they made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, and Timberlake took advantage, 48-36. You mentioned the 5A game. The 5A game was by far the best one of the weekend.
That was a fun one.
Wasn't even close, with Collinsville and McAllister going up and down the field, back and forth against each other. Andrew Carney, the Collinsville quarterback, accounted for all six touchdowns, four on the rush, two through the air. McAllister threw a Hail Mary into the end zone as time expired that got knocked down, and Collinsville wins its first title ever, 42-35, over McAllister. We talked about it on Friday. Bixby just rolled up Deer Creek, 63-14. 3A game was slightly competitive, but Hall and Hall wins its back-to-back over Lincoln Christian. So then we've got
Lincoln Christian thrown to the end zone at the end, I believe, kind of like Hail Mary style.
Did that end up being less than I thought it was a 10-point game? They kicked a field goal and then he got it back or something. That's about the time it was setup time for me on Friday.
Yeah, I had to start getting everything going. Get stuff done too.
So then we have what? Three more games coming up this week.
2A and
2A is Marlowe versus Washington. Is it Washington?
Be a good one.
I can't remember. Hang on.
I can look it up for you.
I know it's Ringling and Cashin in A. Laverne. And Laverne and Balgo Forgan.
Yeah.
So they knock off Dewar, the defending champion. Laverne beat Shattuck 44-12.
Ringling, Cashin, yeah.
Yeah, 2A. Marlowe, Washington, that's right.
Yeah.
As Marlowe beat Eufaula, Washington knocked off Beggs. So a good week in high school football. 24-16.
The
final in the 3A game.
We'll end with this on the football talk. That was the banter from Clinton fans and Elk City fans alike. Was the championship game played at Swazoo, it just Clinton just showed up, dialed in, and just made Tuttle look silly? When Tuttle is truly a deserving team to be there.
They're undefeated. I mean, it's not like
– question is, how would Elk City go up against Tuttle?
Yeah, nobody cares.
I still think –
It's for second.
After Elk City played how they played, I think they would have beaten Poto. But that's just the luck of the draw sometimes when you get in with the brackets.
There's no way to know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to know –
but it's fun to talk about.
How much that semifinal performance by the Elks was fueled because of who they're playing, because of the way the first game went,
sure,
which they wouldn't have had any of that on the other side. And, by the way, unlike Tuttle, the Elks had been on the field with Clinton before. They knew to expect. They knew what you had to be able to do from a physical standpoint. And it's one of those things, you hear about it with speed, or, a lot of people talking about on Friday, you don't realize what's coming at you, like from Bixby with the speed and the athleticism, until you're out there.
Right.
I think playing Clinton is a lot like that from a physicality standpoint. You don't know. You just can't prepare yourself for how physical those guys are until you're out there. And I think the Elks got the first taste of it. And then we're way more prepared coming into that semifinal game to be ready to go. And obviously, as good a season as Tuttle had, they were nowhere near ready for what Clinton had for them. And so the congratulations to Coach Higbee. And the Red Tornadoes, 17th title in school history, and just a dominant, awesome performance. Left no doubt who the best team in Class 4A was this year. And it's something we had asked Dennis a couple of different times, and both of those guys mentioned it in the post-game interviews or whatever, how much last year's disappointment in that game did fuel everything that they started to do way back the day after looking to get back to that field and not feel the same way that they did walking off of it a year ago, and yep. they certainly didn't.
Somebody asked me after their first game against Woodward. You know, that was a Saturday game, so because they delayed it, so I was able to sit down and watch it. Somebody asked me how did Clinton look, and I said it then, and it proved to be true Friday night. I said, I think they got the best defense in 4A. And there's a lot of talk, well, Tuttle does. Clinton put that to rest, too. Their defense was fantastic all year long.
Yeah, and and the biggest advantage, you know what the biggest advantage that defense had?
What's that?
They didn't have to play Caden Powell on offense.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, they didn't have to try to tackle that monster on offense because he was on their team. And that's just it's a huge advantage to anybody to not have to have him on your side.
Yeah.
Just because he's just so athletic and so strong. He's one of the biggest guys out there on the field. And so that's the way that
I know he's going to go play baseball, and that's great. Part of me is like, man, I wonder how he would do at the next level defensively.
Yeah, I mean, there's no chance he can be a quarterback, at least like a D1. I mean, that's not
it. As a linebacker, though, the dude just all season long had a nose for the football. You know what I mean? Just kind of, it's like he was in the huddle. And
we said it like 3 years ago when he was a sophomore. Like, listen, okay, he's whatever he is at quarterback, but his best side of the ball is on defense.
Yeah.
You know, Bryson was a little bit like that, too, last year.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, he could run it, don't get me wrong. But as a safety, that guy was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think that was the secret that was let out on Friday night was, sure, Clinton can move it, and they run the sweep, and they're physical, and they block here, whatever. But defensively, when their best player on offense is their best player on defense, that kind of showed you something about the kid. We had the tip-off invitational here at Elk City with the basketball.
I watched a little.
Elk City played Pampa and Garden City. Weatherford was here as well. They played Piedmont and then the nightcap on Saturday against Pampa. Between those four teams, we went 7-1. The Elks were the only team to lose as they blew a lead in the second half against Pampa on Friday night to lose 49-41. They bounced back a great second half against Garden City Saturday afternoon, and the Elks pulled away and beat the Buffalo 60-44. Coach Hamm and the Elkettes won twice, 47-35 against Pampa. Only 35-29 against Garden City. That game was 30-15 in the fourth quarter, and Garden City went on a run, which was certainly helped by the Elkettes and some turnovers, but they held on to win by that 35-29. It was funny talking to Coach Hamm after the game, especially on Saturday, and he was just, you know, listen, we've got experience, but we don't have much experience leading by 15 with 4 minutes to play in games. You know, it's something we're going to have to work on and going to have to figure out because, you know, there's times not to shoot. There's times, you know, to handle the basketball and just different aspects of the game that they're really as experienced as this team is. And it's got a whole bunch of people that have played a bunch of basketball, but they haven't had a whole bunch of experience in that situation. So that's something that's going to have to clearly improve. But 2-0 is way better than 0-2. And on the Elks side, I thought they showed vast improvement on Saturday afternoon. Garden City had some athletic guys. They played a bunch of kids. And, man, I'm going to tell you something. Joseph Daly. Oh. We are going to have to figure out. I was talking to Brady at the record shop on the messenger yesterday. We're going to have to figure out some sort of nickname for Joseph Daly. I wish, and I may go, I'm going to go back and count. He might have had 10 blocks.
Wow.
I mean, he was controlling the paint. You know, there was one time where he blocked 3 shots in one possession.
So you're telling me he has a daily block? Like, you know, I don't know. I'm trying.
Yeah.
He's good for a block every day.
Like, it's more than one.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, he was awesome on Saturday defensively. Just awesome at the front of the rim. To the point where, you know, even at the very last possession, up 17 or 18, he picked up a foul with about 3 seconds left, still trying to block shots. And Coach Stevens, I mean, it's kind of the same situation for the Elks, though. You know, they're not in, you know, just let him lay it in, man. Game's over. But that's how, that's how hungry he was.
Well,
it was good to see. And the Elks offense came alive in the second half against Garden City. They played really, really well. I watched a little bit of Weatherford girls on Saturday. They looked fantastic, athletic. They lost Sage and they lost Kennedy Price, a couple of taller, longer athletes. They've still got those two Hoffmans at guard. They can still just run you out of the gym. And they did that to Pampa, 64-24. They had a good one against against Piedmont in the opening game on Friday, 35-30, but they did get the win. The Weatherford boys, I watched a majority of that game against Piedmont on Friday. CJ Nixon, dude, he is phenomenal for a freshman.
Yeah.
And he's a bigger kid, but he can handle it. He can shoot it. He can slam it in your face. I don't think he ended up with 30 in his – I don't know if Weatherford had played yet, but if that was their opening game, first game as a freshman in varsity basketball, he had 27 or 28 at one point. I can't remember if he actually got 30 with a couple free throws at the end, but – and it was easy. You know what I mean? It was like he was just in the flow of things. And then if Piedmont kind of cut the lead ever to 9, 8, 7, it was like, all right, here you go, big boy. And he would just get himself a shot, knock it down, and move on down life's path. I mean, it was very, very impressive for a kid that young. Weatherford, their boys won twice, 66-53 and 85-33 over Pampa, which, you know, when you compare those scores, you know, the Elks would be kicking themselves because Elk City should have absolutely beat Pampa and just couldn't muster offense in the second half. So what about you, small schools on Friday night? What did you see over in Canute?
Canute, they took on Merritt. Always a fun night because Merritt and Canute, they get together. I mean, all the fans show up and the play is ramped up a little bit. Merritt girls defeated Canute 45-39, and Coach Doherty just had a good plan of basically almost every dead ball subbing in almost three at a time, and he kept fresh legs out there. And Canute did all they could, you know, and still only lost by six. And then the boys they won. That was a nice bounce back win for them. They were trailing after the first quarter. You know, they lost to Viside and they never looked in rhythm. They lost to them by four. Man, they looked really, really good in rhythm. So clearly practice, you know, was ramped up a little bit for them between games, and they won that one 63-51. Jackson Beck, the freshman, got his first start of the year and was fantastic. I'm just without my notes in front of me. I believe he had 16 or 18 points. Once he got going, he's like, I talk about rhythm a lot. Once he makes that first bucket go in, it look out, because now it's kind of clicking for him. Kyron Winery, he had a nice night too. He was more in control than what I've ever seen him before. And that's good, because he's a strong kid. And when he's really in control and can put the ball through the hoop, he's tough to stop. Absolutely tough to stop. He had 14 first half points, and they kind of gave him a lot of attention, which allowed other things to happen for Canute. But again, they won 63-51. So it was a good night, fun night of basketball over there in Canute. A lot of, you know, and the highlight of the night was they have that fundraiser at half. Where have you seen that? Where they put like a 5-gallon bucket in the middle of the court, and you buy ping pong balls, and you throw them in. And if you get in, you get half the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my kid got that.
Oh, very nice. Katie, I saw a picture. I saw a picture of her. I didn't know what the deal was.
She was happy. What, three? So they had to split it three ways, but she was pretty ecstatic, and she's already spent the money. She went to Walmart yesterday and bought like a Polaroid camera.
Well, as she should.
But it was a fun night, real fun night. And now, 5-county conference tournament. And man, speaking of the boys, they open up with Hammond. I'm sure you'll look at that bracket. That one, man, has potential of being a really good opening round game.
Yeah, the 5-county does start today down in Sentinel. It'll run all the way through Saturday. We'll start on the girls' side today. First game, Merritt versus the Hammond JV. Unfortunately, Hammond's not going to be there, unfortunately for all of us. Fortunately for them, they get to go down to the Bertha Frank Teague right after Christmas. So they'll send their JV team, not their varsity team, because of the rules with tournaments and whatever that the OSSA has in place. So we're not going to get a chance to see maybe Merritt-Hammond in that finals, or Rapo Butler, or whatever it might be. So it's Merritt and Hammond's JV at 4 o'clock today. Cheyenne, Raiden, and Sentinel will play at 6:40 today. That's the girls' games. The boys, Leedy and Merritt, it's a 5:20. And then the nightcap is Cheyenne and Sentinel at 8. And then we'll talk about what's going on tomorrow. We'll tell you the winners from tonight on the show in the morning. So one of the better high school basketball tournaments in the state coming up this week over in Sentinel with the 5-county conference basketball tournament. It's always a good early season measuring stick to kind of see how much teams have improved, because the small schools, they've been playing for a month. You know, November 1, they're ready to go. So, you know, they've got 6-8 games underneath their belt, and now you get to see how much they've improved from the first game against good competition in this tournament, and kind of gives you an idea of what to look forward to right after Christmas with the couple of tournaments. And then all of a sudden, it leads right into districts, and here we go on the road to the state tournament. So it'll happen fast, man. It feels like it's just a sprint. As soon as the five county starts, like, your head spins, and next thing you know, boom, there we are in the Big House.
Yeah, I was looking at the schedule, not counting playoffs. We're already a quarter of the way done.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you're right. It flies by. We're going to blink, and it's going to be over, and it's going to be 80 degrees outside like it was yesterday.
I'm ready. College football weekend was, I don't know, a bit of a dud as far as the way the games went.
First game was awesome.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
You could have quit watching as soon as Oklahoma State and Baylor were off the stage.
Yeah.
You know, Georgia-Bama started out good, and then Bama just rolled them over, as that offense was just awesome. Maybe the most –
Cincinnati-Houston was close for a little bit.
For a little bit, yeah. I mean, Michigan just whipped Iowa. Maybe the most interesting thing to watch all weekend, you know what it was?
What's that?
The Western Oklahoma Realty College Pick'em Leaderboard.
Oh, yeah?
As it went back and forth, and the winner is Andy Pfeffer.
Kind of had the lead the whole time.
He was right there toward the top. There were three tied going into this week: Andy Possum and Johnny Rep. And Andy goes 6-4 and beats Possum by one game. I wonder if Possum changed a pick from right to wrong when he couldn't decide. And will he be beating himself up over such a thing? So congratulations to Andy Pfeffer. He's the winner. We'll get his prize package all ready to go. And I don't know, do we take a picture with him? It's not that good looking.
Whoa. Okay.
I'm hoping he's listening.
I think I met him once. He's a nice guy. Come on.
He's a nice enough guy. But, I mean, we don't need him.
Did you see the
he'll fit right in with us, Faces for Radio.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you see last night I was watching the breaking news of Brent Venables flying in to the Norman Airport on Channel 9? Did you see that? And they, you know, Dean was behind the desk in studio, and his little makeup thing was visible. The little, I don't know what you call it, the brush for the blush, I don't know. And I was talking to a buddy, and we were kind of laughing at that. And I said, see, this is why I'm on radio. I don't have to worry about wearing makeup.
There you go. Congratulations to Andy.
Sure,
thanks.
Sure, Andy doesn't wear makeup.
No, he doesn't. And thanks to Tyler Harrison, Robbie Allen, and all the gang, Western Oklahoma Realty. What fun. 80. We had 80.
That was awesome.
80 folks in that contest.
We want everybody back.
Year-long contest. Absolutely.
Come on, everybody. It's free to enter. That was fun. We'll do it again next year.
Yes, we will.
We'll probably do some stuff. Probably March Madness stuff.
Yeah, we're gonna figure out something for the bowl games.
Bowl games, yeah.
That's always a fun one that we can figure out a prize to give away at the end. So, thanks again to everybody that played, and we'll let you know when we get the bowl game pick'em set up, and everybody come on right back and play with us. It was a lot of fun, lots of fun, mm-hmm. And of course, thank you to Western Oklahoma Realty for being a part of it as well. All right, the conference title games have to start down in Arlington. Oklahoma State and Baylor. Baylor quarterback Blake Shapen, the backup, you know, we talked about who was going to play. It was really kind of a mystery still, even on when we were on the air on Friday, about who it was going to be, and Bohannon just couldn't go. I guess he had tore a hamstring, basically. And a bad one in such a way that it was just not a position where he could play. And guess what? I said it on Friday, and I think it proved to be the case Saturday morning. That was a good thing for Baylor, because Bohannon would not have been able to pick apart the OSU defense with his arm the way that Shapen was. Man, he was in complete control. It did not look like his second start ever, at least in the first half. And now I get it. Oklahoma State helped him immensely. Spencer Sanders showed up. Unfortunately,
that's exactly my thought was
that Spencer Sanders
showed
up.
Sanders we were waiting for all season long.
And it's a testament to Oklahoma State's defense that they still should have won the game.
Yes.
They still should have won the game with their quarterback throwing it to the other team four different times. And I'm going to tell you something. There was a lot of Dave Aranda talk around the OU job.
Yeah.
Going for it from his own 39 when they were up, what, 21 to 3 or 6 still, yeah. Whatever that was.
Yeah.
When Oklahoma State's offense couldn't do anything, Sanders – listen, they were so scared to let him throw it that all they were doing was losing 3 or 4 yards every possession because all they would do was hand it off because they were scared to death that he was going to make what would turn out to be the fatal mistake, maybe a pick six or down a little bit closer to the goal line. And so for Aranda to go for it on the fourth down was idiotic, and it damn near cost him the game. If Oklahoma State could execute from the 1 yard line, it does cost him the game. Now, kudos to Baylor for having the, you know, that big dude in the middle is a stud. Sika, oh my gosh, he doesn't play every play because he's a giant and he plays hard or whatever. But when he's in there, it's hard to get much push up the middle. I still can't believe they didn't at least try at 1 out of 7 plays a quarterback sneak or even quarterback run with Sanders' athleticism. I can't believe they didn't do that. But all of that said, all of those mistakes, it still came down to one play in which if Desmond Jackson just tries to run over the defensive back, he lands in the end zone, and Oklahoma State somehow wins after the quarterback threw 4 interceptions.
Yeah. Agonizing is the only word I could think of when I saw that play out. I thought, man, that when they got the pass interference call, set him up, I thought, no, that's it. They're going to just punch this one in, and that's history, and they're going to be – in the playoff, and the way that I kind of sat there with my mouth open when that game, the way that play ended, just inches away, and the only word that came to my mind was just, that's agonizing, man. That's just something that's going to stick because, you know, no knock on OSU, but they about every, I mean, it's been 10 years since 2011, obviously, until now, and that just has to creep in your mind. Is it going to be another 10 years till they're back in this position? And you hope not, you know, especially with the way the Big 12 is shaping up and how OU's leaving and all that stuff. And it could be their conference to own. But you just don't know how many opportunities you're going to have like that. And that's just, yeah, you just wish that Jackson would just roll them over, you know, just bowl them over, you know, or get tackled into the end zone. But
yeah.
He tried to get the edge, and it was just agonizing. That's what the word that kept coming to my mind. That is agonizing if you're OSU.
And when he got the ball, it looked like, oh, this is a walk-in touchdown.
Yes, it did.
Heck of a play by McVay to even get himself in a situation where he could influence that play. And then to basically outrun him. And, I mean, even when he dove, you're wondering, all right, wait a minute, did it get across? Like, did the tip of the ball get across and then it, like, came back? Because, obviously, the pylon didn't move, right?
No.
But you were wondering, okay, he stretched out. Did he get across there and he pulled his arms back to not fumble or whatever? Maybe, you know, maybe, hopefully.
I was wondering if he was diving for the pylon itself.
Yeah, I think he was just stretching it out as far as he could go.
Plane, yeah.
Whatever he could get to, and it just didn't. What do you think, in your mind, with the way this game played out, and I know the talk is going to be that last play and what Desmond Jackson should or shouldn't have done, but the truth of it is, if a four-year quarterback doesn't throw 4 picks, they're never in that situation in the first place.
Absolutely.
So now, when you look at, you know, moving forward for Oklahoma State, is this Spencer Sanders' job, no question asked, or is this going to be a spring and then go around to next fall to where Shane Illingworth is going to be back involved in who the starting quarterback is at Oklahoma State?
If you want to make Sanders better, you make him work for his job. So, yes, I think there is going to be a battle for that position and I think Gundy, and he's a smart coach, it's to motivate Sanders. Because, listen, this isn't guaranteed for you. You got to work. You got to get better. You got to protect the ball better. You got to not make risky throws, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to get him better and you want to make the team a better team, and they're great this year, you want to make him better offensively, You got to make Sanders work for his job and improve his play. And not so much his play, but his thinking.
Yeah, decision-making. Snap decision-making.
Yes.
Oklahoma State's defense, we've talked for years now about how Oklahoma has wasted historically great offenses. OSU just wasted a historically great defense.
Because of the inept offense, yeah.
Oklahoma State is the only team in the country, Georgia included after Saturday, that allowed three or fewer touchdowns in every single game. The only one.
Wow.
They only allowed over 400 yards once. So out of 13 opponents, 12 of them had less than 400. And they allowed less than 300 yards like eight times, including on Saturday. Second straight game in which the defense pitches a shutout in the second half against a good team, against a top 10 team. But the offense's mistakes almost bit them in Bedlam, did bite them in the Big 12 title game. And so now Oklahoma State is resigned to not being the Big 12 champs, not having a shot at the college football playoff. But their prize is a good one. They're going to head out to the Fiesta Bowl to play Notre Dame. First time those teams will ever meet. But I don't think there's a whole bunch of satisfaction in playing that game when you look at what was lost on Saturday.
Scared of a letdown if you're OSU?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, does it matter?
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, hey, listen. Like when they went and played Stanford and beat them in dramatic fashion, that was fun. And that's it was one of those games people still talk about.
I think
if you can go and beat one of the top-tier programs in college football in Notre Dame and do it in one of the big bowls, there's a lot to play for, a lot of pride left to play for. I'd hope there isn't a letdown. I don't think that coaching staff will allow that, but it's got to creep in their minds we were inches away from not being in this game.
Yeah, that's that's the thing about it. I mean, you can look at it one of two ways. If you want to look at it half, with your glass half full, you say there's no way going into the season – a lot of us thought that's where we'd be if you're an OSU fan.
Right.
You know, this is a heck of a year. It doesn't happen very often. But if you're half empty or almost even more realistic about it, you're crushed. Because that was a golden opportunity to be one of three teams in a playoff for the first time.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen. And the way it happened,
You almost wish they'd lost like 21-3 and not 21-16 with 3 inches away from a win.
And it was kind of the formula though, right? All season long, it was, you know, the offense played great there in that stretch toward the end against bad teams. But when good competition, it was all about the defense winning the game and the offense not losing it. And unfortunately, on Saturday, Sanders' one extra turnover was the difference between a win and a loss. Mm-hmm. And not being able to score from the 1 yard line on seven plays in two possessions. And that's not even counting the fact of the first half drives that stalled and were forced to kick field goals. You know?
Right.
I think one question that won't be asked as much because of the way that Oklahoma State had gotten themselves back down, and maybe that's the answer, but the drive before, if you're Gundy, you settle for that field goal, or I guess two drives before, you're down 8, 21-13, would you have gone for it on the 2 yard line? When if you don't get it, that defense gets to go out there with Baylor on the 2.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I'd absolutely would have probably gone for that.
I mean,
hindsight's 20/20.
It works out. It is. It totally is. I mean, but everybody.
It's easy to say that now.
But at the time, people were going, what is he doing?
Right.
Now, it worked out to where the field goal was good and then the touchdown at the end wins it, as opposed to still having to get a 2-pointer if you don't get it. So, you know, by that logic, you made the right move. But that's also, you've still got to make it. And the way that went, who knows? I mean, there's no other way to assume. But they got stopped because they got stopped every time they ran a play from inside the 2 yard line. It was just incredible how they weren't able to execute and get one of those into the end zone and make the difference in the game. But kudos to OSU on a great year. But my gosh, what a horribly frustrating and deflating loss that has to be for the team, the fan base, the coaches, and everything associated with Oklahoma State, because I still believe they win that game. They're in the playoff. I still believe OSU gets in over undefeated Cincinnati.
Agreed.
Because of a Power 5 conference champ with one loss.
Yep.
Didn't happen, though. How shocked were you at what Bama did to Georgia?
I was at a birthday party. By the way, happy belated birthday to my dad. He turned older on Saturday. I won't say what age. So I was over there. We had it on, and everyone that was there was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I kept saying, are we really shocked Nick Saban and Alabama showed up? Are we really shocked about this? And so I wasn't really shocked. Wasn't really shocked that Alabama, led by Nick Saban, showed up in the SEC championship game and handled Georgia the way they did.
I was. I was shocked. You know, Alabama hasn't.
If it was anybody else, if it was an LSU or anybody else, not LSU, I got to stay in the East, like a Florida or, Tennessee, then yeah, that's where we go, whoa. But because it's Alabama, I mean, as soon as they won that game, everybody was saying, well, they're just going to go win it all again.
I don't know if it's shocking that Alabama won the game.
Just how they won.
How they won the game. They put more points on the board against Georgia in the second quarter than anybody did all year. Georgia had given up 17 to Tennessee. That was the most. Bama scored 24 in the quarter. Bryce Young won the Heisman. There is no doubt about that. No doubt he won the Heisman on Saturday.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal. Look at his QBR, 98 out of 100. Against that defense, if you're Georgia, do you think about JT Daniels and making that switch heading into the game against Michigan? Because no offense to Stetson Bennett, but does JT Daniels give you a higher ceiling? And that higher ceiling has to be achieved clearly if you're going to beat Alabama, because that became a shootout, and Stetson Bennett had a little water gun while Bryce Young had a bazooka. And so do you think, if you're Kirby Smart, do you think about JT Daniels being your starting quarterback for the playoffs?
Incredibly risky to make a switch right before.
But can't we say, after Saturday, yeah. can't we go ahead and say Stetson Bennett isn't good enough to lead Georgia to a national title?
Yeah, I agree. Not yet. Not yet, anyways. But on the other side, I mean, you're risking messing with, and they didn't look like they were in sync there, especially in the second half. I mean, Georgia was just all out of sorts, but that was a lot due because of what Alabama was doing to them. But to make a switch like that before a playoff game, not just any game, but potentially your last game of. You risk messing with chemistry and timing and all that stuff. But I get what you're saying. I mean, JT was the guy, start the year, got dinged up, bring him back. I get that too. There might be a little bit of, speaking of quarterback controversy, there might be a little bit of a battle leading up to this playoff game.
Well, and you're, maybe if you're not going to do it now, should you have done it then? Because look back at the Florida game. 10 of 19 for 161, a touchdown and two picks. Now, Georgia wins 34-7, so nobody cares. But this has been brewing, I think, a little bit, especially against better competition. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty obvious that Stetson Bennett was a little bit overwhelmed by that Alabama, what we thought was a suspect defense. Now, I'll tell you what. Bryce Young is going to win the Heisman. He might should give at least half of it to Will Anderson, his defensive mate for Bama. That guy's numbers, if a defense player was ever going to win it, he and Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan would be guys that would be in that conversation. Because the seasons they've had have been unbelievable defensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, here you go. Got to dance with the one that brought you. I get that idea. I totally do. But what if you've already seen the dance and you know that you're gonna get turned down?
Right. Right, yeah. I get it. Yeah, that's going to be the question in Georgia. Is who do you go with? But I'm a little apprehensive about it because of what I just said, of messing with chemistry.
Yeah, what if everybody loves Bennett in that locker room?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to lose the locker room.
All right, so probably the biggest story of the day is that Oklahoma has hired Brent Venables as the next head coach of the Sooners. Everyone in this state is familiar with Venables' work, not only at Oklahoma, came in with Bob Stoops, was there from, what, 99 through 2011. Been at Clemson ever since. You go back and look at the defenses that he was churning out at OU compared to since, it's not even close. It's so much better. And then, oh, by the way, in his years at Clemson, I think seventh in the country was the worst defense he had. And so this is a guy that clearly a 180 from style if you compare him to the last head coach of Lincoln Riley. Now, first off, I mean, everyone's in a state of euphoria, and I think that goes back to, is this a safe hire? And what I mean about that is this. You would assume, and even Venables said in his statement last night on the plane coming from South Carolina to Norman, you'd assume that this guy is a lifer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
He's going to be at Oklahoma as long as Oklahoma will have him.
Right.
How much do you think that went into it? How much do you think that the prior relationship obviously has a bunch to do with it, with Joe C. and Venables, you know, in his time here and even since? I know I saw Castiglione tweet last night that he went there earlier this year just to go visit the campus and all that, and Brenton's one that took him around, you know? And so they've remained connected, if not close, even in Venables' time there at Clemson. I know this. It's a home run hire as far as the fan base and getting them fired up. Will it be a home run hire as far as leading Oklahoma into the SEC and keeping them somewhat as relevant as they have been in the national landscape?
I get everything that's being said and everything that you said about a safe hire, a lot of familiarity, all that. I get that. But I just don't think Castiglione would go hire a guy just because it's a quote-unquote safe hire. You know, he interviewed him and had him lay out his plan of what are you going to do if I give you this job? At what direction are you going to take this program? You know, offensively, who's going to run the show there? Defensively, do you hire a defensive coordinator? Do you call the shot? You know, it's not just, okay, we like the guy, give him the job, without a plan. So, you know, there's an interview process in there, and it checked all the boxes for Castiglione, and sure, it made it a lot easier to offer him the job because of who he is and his history at OU. So in that regard, I think, you know, there's a little bit more into it than just being a safe hire and a fan favorite. But yeah, it's going to shift on the field. The focus is clearly going to be a defensive-minded team. Now the big questions are, and there's a lot of rumbles of was it Lebby out of Ole Miss coming with them? That's not final. That's nothing. I've seen nothing.
Could
final.
Be done today.
Could be done today.
Yeah, I just saw a tweet from Football Scoop. Ole Miss coordinator, Oklahoma alum Jeff Lebby, target to run the Sooners' offense. Deal could be done today. That's the question we had the text line.
Right.
From Dakota, as far as when will those announcements be made of the coordinators? You ask about he's got to hire a defense coordinator, right?
Yeah, that was one of my questions when this, you know, woke up Sunday it was about mid-morning, you start seeing this was going to happen. My first question was, I mean, obviously he's, you know, like Lincoln was with the offense. He was in full control. And there's even talks like, should he be? That's my question. Is Venables going to be in full control of the defense? Does he bring in a guy to help scheme and game prepare and label him the defensive coordinator? But you got to know Venables is the guy that's going to be making those defensive calls.
Okay, aren't you right back in the same situation you were, except for the other way around?
I know. That's
where you've got a guy that's not paying attention to one side and
right.
only the other.
And that's why I asked, does he hire a defensive coordinator?
He has to. I mean, I think – and listen, he's been, I think you said it right, he has been just as successful as a defense coordinator as Lincoln Riley was an offensive one.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at what his defenses have done, I mean, the guy's coached three national title winners, been in that game multiple other times.
Like eight.
Yeah, and so it's not like, and you look at the overall ranks in the nation, Yeah, he's up there just as high on defense as Riley was on offense. But did that not necessarily teach a lesson? If you're Castiglione and you're listening to this plan, that has to cross your mind, right? Even as much of a great coordinator that Brent Venables has been on the defensive side his entire career, doesn't that give you pause with what you just saw from an offensive mind in Lincoln Riley as the head coach of your team?
Probably, yeah, absolutely.
Because there's no doubt that the weaker side was the one he paid no attention to.
Right.
And maybe that comes with the territory of the way that his style of coaching and Venables' style will be the other way around. But I think in order to be – I mean, listen, Bob Stoops was a national title-winning defensive coordinator in 1999 – coming off of his time at Florida, and he turned it over to his brother in Venables. Now, he probably had, you know, the hammer at the end of the day in the meetings and as far as preparation goes.
Right.
But game day, game time, when it's happening, I think as the head coach, and we saw this, there's more things to be concerned with than just one side of the ball. And I think that puts you behind the eight ball if you don't have the head coach overseeing the whole thing, as opposed to just concentrating on one thing. Now, you could argue that it's more intricate to call plays on offense than it is defense. That's fine, but I think the thing about having Venables on the field as the head coach, you can get away with having the defensive coordinator then up in the booth because you've basically got one on each side of it. You got one in the booth, you got one on the field that can relay what they're seeing in a way to make the guys on defense understand better because of his background. I think it's as far as the way that the fan base is reacting, the former players are reacting, and quite honestly, the players that are still there are reacting. It's a home run hire in that sense so far. And what makes it a grand slam, obviously, is one thing.
Recruiting.
Caleb Williams.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, and I think that goes back to who the OC is going to be, the offensive coordinator. Does it fit what Williams thinks is going to help him as a player?
And now all we've seen is Lebby. Something happened yesterday. Would that change anything? And what happened yesterday was Matt Rhule cut Joe Brady loose.
Yeah.
Is that one of those things where
– Yeah, where does he wind up and does that – yeah, is that where – Caleb Williams wants to go because he wanted to play.
He wanted to play for Joe Brady. And depending on where he shows up, does that influence Williams' decision no matter what happens at Oklahoma? Breaking news, by the way, something that's been widely speculated. It's official. Miami has fired Manny Diaz. So Mario Cristobal, come on down.
That's where I was going to go. Does he bring on Joe Brady?
And now would that be the Joe Brady?
Yeah.
I mean, would anybody – would anybody be surprised if Joe Brady winds up in the Nick Saban Rehabilitation Center?
No. Yeah.
For coaches.
You know, some good news. There is the 2022 four-star athlete. You've seen this? Jaron.
Oh, yeah, the guy from Hayes, Kansas.
There's talk of him going to Clemson because of Venables. Now, 73% chance it goes to OU.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right.